Welcome to Opportunity Rocks with your host, Rocky Bhatia. This podcast explores the dynamic world of finance and how it affects your business. Get ready for in-depth discussions on everything from taxation and compliance to emerging trends in the financial and insurance sectors. With over a decade of experience in both the Canadian and U.S. markets, we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to rock with your host, Rocky Bhatia.
Welcome, everyone, to Opportunity Rocks with Rocky Bhatia. I'm your host, and I'm a tax partner here at Baker Tilly. And I'm very, very excited to have a special guest here today, Sean Grant Young. He is our National Tax Director with Baker Tilly Canada, and we're going to be discussing recent changes in Canadian legislation, what's happening in the U.S., and other stuff. Really excited to have you here, Sean.
Thank you, Rocky. Excited to be here.
Well, thank you for joining me. Probably have a lot of interesting things to cover today. But before we get started, maybe if you can talk a little bit more about your role. I'm a tax partner here at Baker Tilly. And as in a typical tax partner role, I deal with a lot of client situations and with the government and clients and helping our clients get the best results on a tax basis. But maybe if you can talk a bit more about yourself. You are in a very unique position and one of a kind in our firm here. So I'd love to hear, kind of what you do and what your day to day is.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that. So what I said when I joined was that there's a lot of the strategy and operations that we could take on as from the national office. I think historically, a lot of the day to day is and will continue to be the learning and growth, some of the administration, working with the right to define the right partners from whether it's software or research or other perspective, and expanding that to that strategy, whether it's working with the global office, whether it's working with our local offices to help develop best practices, help build common standards. So it's a lot of hats. There's a lot of opportunity. This is a great network. These are great people, and I'm super excited to be in this role.
Yeah, perfect. Now, this role must be more challenging with the recent changes in legislation and government. Most in particular, recent thing with Trudeau's announced resignation. Maybe we can get right into that and talk about what that means for Canadian taxpayers right now. I don't even know if I can say the word properly. Prorogue, is that right?
Yes.
So we got a prorogue of Parliament. Can you talk about what kind of just recently happened with our Canadian government? There was tax legislation introduced, but not passed, from my understanding. So can you talk about that, what that legislation was, and what it means for Canadian taxpayers?
Yeah, I mean, this has been, it's been an interesting ride going back to 2017, even with this government, when they introduced the TOSI rules and some of the other rules at that time. Most recently, the capital gains exemption. That was my first year with Baker Tilly. They changed the capital gains inclusion rate, or proposed to anyways. It went from being what I thought was going to be a nice, quiet election year budget to chaos, might be the right word for it. And now with this prorogation of Parliament, they've really left the taxpayers and the tax advisors high and dry, and really not given anybody the clarity or guidance that's needed in a environment like this. You look at things like the capital gains inclusion rate. Yes, it was put in a notice of ways and means motion, which is effectively, drafting legislation and putting it out there for everyone to see. And it wasn't just the inclusion rate changes. There were changes to alternative minimum tax. There was the fix related to the capital dividend account adjustments, which was a falling out of the capital gains inclusion rate, and some other international changes. So there was that, which was actually papered and put together and presented. But beyond that, there were, and I went and found the list, there's a list of 110 other measures that have been discussed or proposed or put in a budget document that have not been put in a notice of ways and means or a bill at this point. And that doesn't include the promises that are made from time to time by government officials in the media. So we're really in a unique place that we have so much legislation that's in limbo, in different states of limbo, And then you add on to that, that we can't, Parliament cannot even move this along until a new leader is found for the Liberal Party and government resumes at the end of March, which doesn't leave a lot of time for either them to yay or nay these changes, get them through and allow people to start filing their taxes with some certainty.
And a lot of these changes impact for the 2024 taxation year, is that correct?
That's correct. We're looking, some of them are effective Jan 1, 2024, some are effective June 25th, 2024. So there's different times all these changes would have come in. Some of the international ones would have come in 2025. But the fact is, a lot of these filing deadlines are coming up or have already passed in some cases for corporations. And there is guidance, but there's not good guidance or concrete filing opportunities or filing positions for these clients when we didn't have forms, the correct forms for the longest time. We don't have a guarantee that these rules will come into effect. People don't have faith that CRA can administer the refunds or the changes necessary for their 2024 filing. So you've got a situation where there's not a lot of trust, rightly or wrongly. You've got limited direction from the CRA and from finance. You have groups, taxpayer supporters or law firms that are filing requests to determine if CRA applying these rules is even constitutional. So there are a lot of challenges going on right now. And for us as tax practitioners and tax advisors, it's incredibly difficult for us. If you think about a normal person who's either depending on their accountant or subject to whatever TurboTax gives them for their personal tax return, it's very daunting for them because they could have a balance due that they don't know about, or there could be money that they have to put out the door that should be spent on groceries or gas or any of the other things that are an issue right now.
So what's our advice to taxpayers? So we got a situation where some rules are in place as of 2024. We don't know if it's enforceable by law, if it is law even. And we got government potentially coming back to the end of March, which is 1 month away from the filing deadline of April 30th. What is a taxpayer to do? And how do they navigate this? And if they project a higher liability of $10,000, $100,000 because of one of the rule changes, whether it be capital gains, AMT, or capital dividend account, what is the recommendation on what is a taxpayer to do in that situation?
There's no magic answer to it right now. It's very situational. It's I think, great opportunity for us to connect with our clients and have a discussion around it. There are avenues that can be suggested, but at the end of the day, it is that conversation with the client and that individual or family's decision to say, I will follow the letter of the law. I will follow what I think is right. I will follow path A, B, C. They all have their ups and downsides right now. But until we get that clarity, you have, based on CRA's position, they will expect us to file with those higher inclusion rates, which will generate higher tax. Are there ways to mitigate the interest or the process involved in getting that refund? Maybe, probably. But again, that all depends on the taxpayer and the administration by CRA after the fact.
So let's say you're a taxpayer and you do have a sizable change in liability based on this proposed legislation from a capital gains point of view. And let's say it's a sizable number.
Yep.
Now you have basically two choices. One is to comply with that higher rate that may not be implemented, but you've essentially given the government money that they owe you back. And then there might be a procedure involved in getting that money back.
Yep.
Presumably it could be a significant time lag with that too, right?
Absolutely. Right. You're nailing it there. That's the issue, is the time lag. And for most of our clients, hopefully there are ways to mitigate this. There are expectations of installments or other things like that, where yes, you're paying, you may, if you make the larger payment now and they don't change the rates, hopefully that amount, it just becomes your installments for the next period, okay, rather than trying to pull it back or needing to pull it back right away.
Yeah.
But there will be some cases. If you think of a business that has, that's tight on cash flow, that is, you know, or needs that cash flow for an expansion or whatever else, they're going to be in a very precarious position. You know, personally, I mean, I wish I had this problem. There's not a lot of capital gains in my my portfolio right now. But I'd be looking at it and saying, how do I minimize the timing? Do I pay the lower amount now and then put an installment in for next year for the difference? So if it's, again, 75 or 67,000 instead of 50,000, I'll pay the 50,000 because I owe that. I take the second chunk, that 17, and I put that in my installment account, because then if it does go through, you can carry it back. If it doesn't go through, great. I've got a nice, healthy installment for next year. It's easier, at least my experience with CRA, to request that an installment is refunded than to have to go through and refile and amend your tax returns and request refunds, or wait for CRA to reassess and generate that refund. So we, there's no, the long and the short of it, there's no good answer for our taxpayers right now.
Right, right. And essentially, you're just, you know, that's the most conservative approach. So you've prepaid the or you've paid the tax. And if you've overpaid, then it gets credited to, you know, future years, a prepayment account. So yeah, that seems like the most prudent approach. Could a taxpayer also potentially reserve that money in a separate bank account and hold on to it if they feel more comfortable doing that and just saying, well, if I have to pay that extra tax, you know, maybe I'll cough it up as needed? Or do you recommend against that?
It really depends what your risk tolerance is. You know, worst case scenario, you're paying interest at 8, 9, 10% on that balance due from CRA. It's a pretty good chunk. If your portfolio is returning 20%, sure, maybe you can do that. But really, again, that's a personal decision that the taxpayer needs to make with themselves, with their family, with their advisor on what the path that's most acceptable for them.
Right. No, that makes sense. So kind of moving on to, I guess, our friends south of the border, no shortage of tax policy and changes and activity on the government side. So as everyone's aware, there's been a lot of discussions from President Trump on a 25% tariff on Canadian exports into the United States. And this, you know, we're already in a challenging economy from what I see. You know, now we're, you know, we're dealing with tax uncertainty, government uncertainty on our end. And at the same time, now you got a very, very forceful president on this on the state side that's being very aggressive with, you know, with Canada and often claiming that it should be part of the U.S. But leaving that aside, for now, do you feel that how do you see the tariff situation playing out with the Canadians, and what are we doing as a firm to kind of get our clients prepared for something like this that might be just a week away?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, right? You know, Trump or no Trump, anytime a government changes, either Canada or the U.S., they're trying to set their precedent for the next 4 years or set their path for the next 4 years. And in a time when our economy is suffering, we have inflation, you know, we're not getting the innovation jump or the productivity jump that we've been hoping for. This just adds fuel to that that fire. These tariffs could be a massive issue for a lot of Canadian companies. The interdependency with the U.S., the purchasing, the selling. You look at low margin businesses, if they have a U.S. component, these tariffs are going to eat up what little margin they have left. Viability will be a question. International investment in Canada will become an issue. Because if you are I read recently I believe it was a Chinese firm was looking at building a factory in Southern Ontario. As soon as these tariffs were threatened and really became somewhat of a reality, or at least more likely than they were before, they just shut down the build. They're not going to build until there's some certainty around Canada-U.S. relations. And for a smaller community in southern southwestern Ontario, that's a huge hit. You know, that could be hundreds of jobs, that could be millions of dollars into the economy that's effectively frozen. And that's those secondary and tertiary fallouts from the instability we're seeing both in Canada and then the push from the US.
And that's what exactly, in my opinion, the US administration wants right now. Like just enough fear factor to get, you know, behaviors to start to change. And presumably that factory will now be built in the United States, maybe just across the border in Michigan or something of that nature. And it's all coming at a time where we just finished, I think the Canadians just finished paying for the Gordie Howe Bridge in Windsor. And no investment on the US side from that. And, you know, it's a very inopportune time for something like that. You know, we were chatting earlier before the podcast is that, you know, part some of the cushions that the Canadian government could come up with is a pandemic style protection. Do you want to comment on that? I know that was pretty interesting what you kind of mentioned on that.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the initial reaction of people when they've read that article or when I've talked to them, it's mind blowing. The pandemic programs, as much as they did help and, you know, were valuable for some, it was an incredible amount of administration. It was a incredible amount of cost to these taxpayers. There was cost, you know, these firms were doing things or filling these out or doing these on the fly. It really is important in my mind. And I think generally speaking from the Canadian tax partners, that the government handles this with a measured approach. We can't have a knee-jerk reaction. We can't jump into something and make a mistake, because that's what, again, the negotiation tactics, the business tactics that the U.S. administration is employing, you don't know what you're getting until they do it.
Yeah.
So you can plan, and you can plan multiple ways. You can look at it and say, how does this affect the US-Canada-Mexico Free Trade Treaty? Are we going to align with the US and become completely aligned and do everything they say and just grovel in that respect? Or, you know, are we going to need to look to Europe and Mexico and diversify that trade, those trade relationships away from the US and give us a little more autonomy in that respect?
Yeah, well, you brought up some quite a few points within there, and you know, just coming back to the government benefits, so to speak, to cushion off a tariff if there is a tariff. You know, that comes at a cost too, because where does the government get the funding from? Well, you know, does that lead to, you know, taking it away from some other programs, or does that lead to increased spending, which can be inflationary again? And then the other side is, you know, probably might have an audit. I mean, neither you and I are economists, but, you know, presumably there'll be a notable decline, further decline in the Canadian dollar and the exchange rate, again, leading to inflation. That's an inflationary, you know, pressure for Canadians as well. So it seems like we got a situation with higher taxes, with tariffs, and potentially a currency debasement, is that, you know, we're all leading point, signs are pointing to higher inflation and more difficulty for Canadians. And what's scary to me is that when, even if the government support does come out to cushion off the tariffs, we're relying again, maybe on a lower dollar to export our goods, and we're relying on government, you know, funding on government programs to make us competitive as opposed to innovation.
100%. I totally agree. It feels like we're just getting the last inflationary cycle under control.
Yeah.
And hopefully lessons learned from that process will help avoid as significant a step back for the economy. But again, we're not economists.
Yeah.
We're tax folks, and all we can do is look at this and say it's going to cost our people and our taxpayers money.
Yeah. And whether we like it or not, there appears to be, you know, strong leadership on the US side, you know, and whereas we just have no leadership here. With that, you know, still waiting to kind of hear what Trump has from a tax policy point of view. You know, recently we were chatting as well that he's looking at, you know, potentially or has reduced funding for the Internal Revenue Service there. So maybe some might experience some less audit activity on the state side, but also probably looking at grabbing tax from companies that are internationally based, so coming from other jurisdictions. And it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out there as well. So he's going to probably pad up his tax base with revenues from foreign companies as well, yeah. Right? And reduce the U.S. corporate rate right now, which stands at 21% to potentially 15%. Again, making the U.S. very competitive compared to Canada.
Oh, it's a huge delta when you look at the East Coast, where tax rates are in the 30% range. Ontario, 26.5%. Alberta is the most competitive at 23%.
And yeah,
15-23%. That's a mile.
Yeah.
That's very, very interesting for especially for an investment.
Yeah.
So we'll wait and see. Again, it's all talk until it's on paper. That's just the name of the game. I think we'll see something again soon, hopefully. And in the Canadian government, Department of Finance, everybody, they need to take this in stride. Again, I'd love to see lower Canadian corporate tax rates. I'd love to see a bit of a rework in the way our refundable tax regime works, and really our tax system as a whole needs to be revisited. But just dropping rates to keep those deltas consistent, that's not the answer either. This really needs to be a measured, thought out process where there will be some short-term pain, but long-term, we need to align with the right markets. Mm-hmm. We need to align and ensure our tax base is both protected and reasonable. Healthcare is expensive, and all the other benefits that come with Canada are expensive. And if we keep high rates, you know, we might lose some of that innovation. We might continue to have people moving to the US or moving offshore. We need to be competitive in that respect, but we can't, you know, cut off the leg to save the foot, and mm-hmm. or whatever the saying is. We can't put ourselves in a negative position because there's a short-term change. We need to be looking at this generationally, not 3-5 years from now.
Yeah, that's very important. Not only has 2024 been an interesting year, so was 2023.
Yep.
So was 2022 from a tax policy perspective. And we saw the degree of changes happen. You know, what would happen once in every 5 to 10 years was happening on a yearly basis, right? And probably fair to say they were getting away with it. The minority government was supported, I believe, the longest minority government in history of Canada. And now what's happened is that the U.S. administration has shined a light on a broken Canadian system from a tax point of view, from a governmental point of view. Mm. So we're due for an overhaul. Right. And a bit yeah. more kind of balance and checks. Doesn't mean we go to a U.S. style rate, as you were mentioning. Yeah. Doesn't mean we just drop the rates, but we have to do something to be more competitive. Right. And to encourage that investment, to encourage that innovation, to encourage Canadians, the reverse brain drain, to kind of get that mechanism back. So, I think we both agree we're in it for a lot of short-term pain. But once this, election gets sorted out on what's going to happen, and hopefully a stable government's in place that is more focused on the problems the Canadian economy's been having and the challenges we have from a taxation and a budgetary perspective.
It starts with good, solid foundational policy, and that builds into everything else. Some of the problems we're seeing in this current administration, in this current government, is they've either needed to tax to spend, or they've been pushing other policies through tax. You look at these anti-flipping and these underused homes taxes and all these other taxes, they are designed to help address short-term rentals and the Airbnb market and the lack of housing. But the fundamental issue is we need more houses. We don't need a tax on condos that are being flipped by speculators.
Mm-hmm.
Great, it's fine, that might be a problem, but in my mind, they need to go back to the drawing board and look at good foundational policy across the board. And that will help us even out tax policy. Because if you take the noise and the the one-off taxes and the targeted taxes, because they aren't one-off, they'll hit you every year. The targeted taxes, like the taxes on real estate, the extra credits that are being handed out and turned our wonderful green tax book into two wonderful green tax books. There's a simpler way to do it, and it's time. Mm-hmm. I think that's the message. And hopefully, I believe the conservatives have said it publicly, that they will review the tax system as a whole, which I think is a welcome start. But they need to follow through on that and make sure that, again, it's setting up the generation for success, not just that government.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you're trying to address, you know, a different problem with a tax solution.
Yes.
Right. And the problem also with that is that often, even if you solve the problem or situation changes, often the taxes then disappear. So,
yeah, well, you know, that's why we still have the GST. That's why we have income tax.
Income tax to begin with, right? It became, it was started off as a war measure, right? Temporary war measure. Right.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, you know, not that we need any more work, creates more work for us to, you know, help our clients navigate through an already complex and difficult situation and for no benefit for the general public, right? What it was designed to do.
Yeah, and the general public is the issue to me. Like where there's business owners and there's successful entrepreneurs who can afford and know where to get this advice, that's one thing. And I mean, that's when they lean on us, and that's really why we're here. What is challenging is there are tens of millions of Canadians who don't have the resources, don't have the know-how, don't have the support to be able to do this. You know, even just answering a CRA request of, can you send in your medical credits or your donation credits? Well, not everybody is equipped to do that. They typed the number into TurboTax and thought everything was fine. Mm-hmm. And now they're sending those things. And if they're not sending them in at the right time, everything's gone online. So now they're depending on a notification that they got a message and they have to be liable to log into their My Account to get it. So the process is not seamless. The process hasn't been introduced or thought about from a day-to-day taxpayer's perspective. It needs to be addressed. Or again, the public is the group suffering. It's not necessarily our clients, but it's their families, it's their neighbors, it's their cousins that are the ones that are really being disadvantaged by this lack of foresight and long-term planning.
Yeah, and we notice in our profession, you know, generally speaking, not a lot of people are turning to tax. A decreasing amount year to year, you know, are turning to tax as a profession, and in an environment where it's only getting more complicated. So you're seeing two forces kind of moving in unfortunate opposite directions, which is creating a strain on availability of proper and qualified tax people that can help clients. And then on top of that, CRA, you know, recently did some hiring, I think, over the last few years, quite a significant amount of hiring. But the question is, are these people trained? All right. And are they able to address the questions? Are assessments going out that are maybe just completely off base or just incorrectly calculated? I think we're seeing a lot of that as well. Putting a lot of strain on taxpayers as well, right, for that.
And I don't envy the position of CRA's leadership right now. You know, they've been dragged through the mud in the media. You know, everyone's heard the statistic. There's six times as many CRA officials as there are IRS officials per capita.
Yeah.
So we've got more people per taxpayer working on this. Mm-hmm. And we don't have transparency. There have been service delays, endless service delays. Audits are taking years. There was, just a quick example, a simple GST, HST return filed. They didn't understand it, didn't like it. And this was 2019. They finally received their assessment, which is incorrect, by the way, at the end of 2023. So this sat in limbo with CRA for give or take 4 years, and then the conclusion was incorrect. So this taxpayer now has to turn around and object to this. And because it's a large number, And there's different rules between income tax and excise tax on what can be collected. CRA is demanding they pay this bill that's 4 years overdue in their eyes. So, you know, just one example of what our taxpayers are going through. Thankfully, this company is strong and will persevere. But again, if you are that company that lives month to month, week to week, day to day, and depend on your cash flows and can't afford to put up a letter of credit and pay that interest, or can't afford to cut a check for, you know, what is a week's worth of working capital, it's very, very difficult. And, you know, you look at who they're hiring, how they're training, there's no transparency, and there's no visible repercussions when things like this happen. So we need accountability from the government as a whole, and specifically CRA, to step back and let us know, how are these things being dealt with? What is this? You know, you think of how the CRA works necessarily, but you think of police. If there's an issue with police, they have their internal reviews. It's generally very public when someone is dismissed because it ends up in the media. You don't have that with a CRA. Or some government organization. So having that transparency, to me, just to understand what is going to happen. And I think for them too, having that requirement to provide top service or have repercussions if you make a mistake. Because again, if you make a mistake, you're in trouble. If they make a mistake, we're in trouble. So until that is
so, you know, true,
that balance, yeah, of power is restored, I think we'll continue to have struggles with CRA and the administration of our tax system, which again is a fallout of the incomplete policy that's being put forth by the government and finance right now. It's very hard, you know, I open this by saying I don't envy their position. They're trying to administer half-baked policy, half-past policy. They're relying on old administrative positions to do X, Y, and Z. They're not being given, they're just the police. Their job is not to dictate tax policy. They don't decide it. They're just there to administrate and enforce.
Thank you, Sean. That was a great episode. And thank you to all our listeners for tuning in. That was great information and very timely in a very uncertain world. And I'm looking forward to everyone join us for our next episode. I'm your host, Rocky Bhatia.
Thank you for tuning in to Opportunity Rocks, hosted by Rocky Bhatia. We hope today's episode provided valuable insights to help you navigate and succeed in the world of business. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss future conversations with more industry experts, because you never know when a great opportunity rocks next.